Okay, before we take up the next agenda item, which is Herring Amendment 5, ask Terry Stockwell to make an introduction.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to introduce the council to Maine's new commissioner, Norm Olson. Very proud to have him here today, and I appreciate him coming here. He's just recently gone through the confirmation process, and my understanding is that he will be officially appointed by the governor at the end of this week. And pleased to have you here.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. It's a great pleasure to be back here, and I'm truly honored to be back in your company. I haven't seen any bloodletting yet, so things have obviously improved since my term on the council in 1978-81. And I know that you have a difficult task in order to help manage the New England fishing industry, recreational, commercial, and for the benefit of all the people of New England and the Northeast. I'd like to point out I'm very happy to be here among old friends, including Jim Audlin excuse me, David Pierce, who were active with the council when I was young, as well as back in the audience, Dick Allen. You hear Dick? Yeah. And David Warden. And one person I'd particularly like to point out to everybody, a true friend of the New England fishing industry and the coastal communities, former New Hampshire state legislator, a member of their Marine Resources Committees, and somebody who, by his 12 years of service on this council, showed a true tolerance for pain, and that is Captain Herb Drake of Ryan, New Hampshire. I won't take any more of your time except to say that Governor LePage and I are of one mind in the New England fishing industry, and that is to create sustainability across the board, and that is sustainability of the fish stocks, of the fishing industry, of the recreational fishing industry, of our coastal communities, and of the industries associated with it. And that puts this council in, of course, an extraordinarily challenging position to help foster that sustainability across the board. In Maine, as in your states, sustainability is critical. We've lost too much shoreside processing. We've lost the opportunity for people to grow up in the communities to which they were born, and we'd like to restore that opportunity for all of our citizens in Maine. Thank you.
Welcome aboard. All right, now we'll turn back to the next agenda item, which is the only agenda item left for the rest of the day. Herring Committee Report, tab 5. Before I turn it over to the committee chair and staff, I just want to refresh people's memory. I did mention yesterday that the executive committee met and discussed the timelines of all the management measures under development and those pending, and made a recommendation that the most recent Herring Committee meeting should have been canceled, which it was. You're all aware of that. And the preference of the executive committee, or the recommendation of the executive committee, is that we come back to the council and take a status of where we are, stock status of where we are, issue by issue, in hopes of refocusing the amendment and reviewing all the management measures and determining whether or not we have the appropriate range of options or alternatives, measure by measure. There may be those that aren't necessarily ready to move forward in the amendment. We need to keep an eye on the timelines that we've established for this amendment and the fact that they've continued to slip because measures have been added to this development over the past 3 years that perhaps haven't been defined as well as they should, or in other cases are very controversial, or we lack data to make an objective decision. There are other measures that have yet to be fully developed where I'm sure today we will have arguments over whether or not the data is good enough to formulate options or alternatives and move forward and direct the staff to develop the DEIS. But from my perspective as chair today, I want to make sure that we do have a good range of options so that the public can give us a comment and that the options that we do have in the document can be analyzed by staff. So I'm going to be looking to staff to direct the council as to when we're in an area that isn't clear or they're not sure how to develop these alternatives. And I ask the council to consider that as they're making motions and debating motions So I think we need to refocus on the monitoring component of this amendment. I know we have other options and other issues that we're hoping to address, but I think we need to take a step back and look at what it is we're trying to accomplish with respect to monitoring, who we believe we're trying to monitor, do we have a range of alternatives there, how we're going to fund that, both at sea and if we discuss and consider dockside as well, how we're going to fund that. That's a really important issue. Make sure we have a good range of alternatives there with rationale. We have issues such as closed area or groundfish closed area access. We'll be reviewing that. We have issues concerning river herring that we should consider. Do we have a good range of alternatives there? Spawning issue, which I think there's a white paper in our binder, but the committee and the council have not had any discussion concerning spawning. So you need to take all those things into consideration as we look at this document and make some probably what we're going to be some tough decisions for individuals around the table as to what stays and what goes. But I sincerely hope that we can stay to our timeline and get this document in a way shaped up in a way that allows the public to give us their feedback. Keep that in mind as we go through the document. I think Lori did an excellent job putting together a decision document, which you all have. And I think we'll be relying heavily upon that as we move into discussion later on in the day. Are there any questions? Dr. Pierce?
Yeah, John, I can't recall whether you, when providing a summary of the executive committee discussions and recommendations, if you had anything to offer on behalf of the executive committee related to river herring issues being dealt with in this amendment now?
No, we didn't have any specific discussions about different management measures in the document. I think there was and I'll ask other executive committee members because it was a unanimous feeling of the body. But there was a concern that we were getting hung down in the weeds on things like hogsheads and dipsticks and things of that nature, and we had lost focus on the primary reason we, as a council, back in Amendment 4, decided to move forward with monitoring. And as you all remember, it wasn't ready, so it became Amendment 5, and like mushrooms, things grew. So there's a sense, I think, at least amongst the executive committee, that we need to get back to the basics of why it is we're doing what we're doing and make sure that we're doing it as well as we can. But I'll turn to other executive committee members if they want to add to that. Okay. Terry?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Just for my clarification, it's your intention that we package up what we get done today and send that out for public comment?
I think we should keep that as a goal in our mind as we work through this document today. We may get to a place at the end of the day where we're still at loggerheads over one or two critical issues, and, of course, that'll play out in a vote to move it forward for development or not. But I think that should be the goal or the mission of this discussion for the rest of the day. Anything further? Okay, I'll turn it over to Committee Chair Doug Grout and staff.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. As you stated before, the information is behind tab 5. Probably the most important things for you to pull out would be document number 1, the discussion document, and document number 2, which is a decision outline that was put together by staff. And also there's a presentation that Lori will be giving, and the document number 12 is there that was just handed out today. There's also a whole series of information in here. The PDT has been very productive over these past 2 or 3 years in producing a lot of information here for us to base our decisions on. You'll see them listed here, and there's also a CD that has additional documents that in order to save some trees, put them on electronic basis. Lori also wanted me to point out that stack of paper that you see on her table to her left is the complete list of public comment that we've been provided on this this document so far. So it's quite extensive. Just as an overview on this decision outline, as I said, Lori and Talia had put together, I think it's an excellent thing. It outlines the goals and objectives. It outlines the status of where the staff feels we're at with each of the sections, and then goes into listing each of the sections, whether it's ready for the draft EIS and any comments. It also outlines what goals and objectives that it addresses. And clearly, the one thing that you'll note is that there's some that have a dark gray area and say no, that it's not ready. I think those are the things that we are going to have to make the decisions on, whether we're going to try and flesh these out at this meeting or whether we're going to remove them from consideration, because at least at this point, if we're going to move forward at this point, because according to the staff, these are not ready to go at this point. So with that introduction here, I'd like to turn it over to Lori to provide an overview of where we're at with this. Thank you, Lori.
Okay, thank you. My presentation slides should be available on the table outside as well. And as Doug mentioned, you'll probably want to refer primarily to documents 1 and 2, particularly document 2, which is the decision outline. I'm just going to very briefly go through the decision outline in this presentation and give you an overview of where we are and where we have come since the September Council meeting when you last reviewed this. As everybody is aware, we have identified about 5 major issues to address in this amendment, and I'm going to go through them one at a time, but let's start with the first one, which was the priority for this amendment, which is the catch monitoring program. The first thing I'd like to do is revisit the goals and objectives of the catch monitoring program. These are goals and objectives that the full council approved for the catch monitoring program. These are listed in your decision outline, and underneath some of these goals and objectives, or I'm sorry, underneath some of these goals, there are more specific objectives that I have not included in this slide. But if you refer to the decision document, under Roman numeral 2, you'll see goal number 1, which is on the screen here, to create a cost-effective and administratively feasible program for accurate and timely records of catch of all species in the Atlantic herring fishery. There is a 1A that's a little more specific in the decision outline, so you should take a look at that. But overall, there are 4 goals, that being the first one, the second one being to develop a monitoring program that will foster support by the industry and others, i.e. a program that is well-designed and credible. Number 3 is to design a robust program for adaptive management. And number 4 is to evaluate bycatch estimates from sea sampling versus port side sampling. And again, the more specific objectives are listed in the document. Now, the catch monitoring alternatives in the document have been restructured since the last time you saw them. When you saw them at the September Council meeting, there were sort of general categories, measures to address carrier vessels, measures to address quota monitoring and reporting, measures to address observer coverage. We've taken the document and tried to repackage things to start taking all of these bits and pieces and bringing them together into what we are going to view as a much more comprehensive kind of approach to establishing a catch monitoring program. So now what you'll see in the document are 4 general sections for your catch monitoring alternatives. The first one being a section that is now called the Proposed Adjustments to the Fishery Management Program. These include administrative and general provisions that are just being contemplated in the amendment. They're not things that need options. They're things like establishing a regulatory definition of transfer at sea. We're either going to do it or we're not. So those have become just a section of administrative type provisions. Permit provisions have been incorporated in here, and this includes the options to change the possession limit for vessels that have an open access permit in the mackerel fishery. So the mackerel fishery measures and alternatives have sort of been consumed into the catch monitoring program. That sort of simplifies that element of the amendment a little bit. Notification and reporting requirements, measures to address carriers and transfers at sea, that all falls under a larger section that deals with the fishery management program. Then the next large section is going to be your at-sea catch monitoring program. And this element will include your measures to address observer coverage, options for observer coverage levels, measures to maximize sampling and address net slippage, and an alternative to consider maximized retention through an experimental fishery. The next large section is your portside catch monitoring section, which may include a federal portside sampling program, sampling priorities, sampling coverage levels, and alternatives to verify self-reported landings, which I'll go through later. Then the last section would be the funding and how the catch monitoring, the options for funding the catch monitoring program. I've actually moved this to the end of the document because I'm assuming that at some point when some decisions are made about funding, those decisions could relate to any elements that are in this document. So funding sort of applies across all of the alternatives and all of the issues. Okay, so very briefly, as I mentioned, the fishery management program section, which is now section 3.0 of the document, includes your administrative and general provisions, regulatory definitions, things like that that I mentioned. The second section would be, the measures to address carrier vessels and transfers at sea. The third element of this section are your options for your trip notification requirements, pre-trip notification and pre-landing notification. The fourth section under the fishery management program are your alternatives for ACL and sub-ACL monitoring. And as I mentioned earlier, the fifth section are the changes to the open access permit provisions for mackerel vessels in areas 2 and 3. Those options have now been linked to possession of a limited access mackerel permit. So the number of potential permits that would be authorized for an increased trip limit has been limited to those that have a limited access mackerel permit. Very briefly, the ACL, sub-ACL monitoring alternatives, we're essentially considering two alternatives here, which is one would be to maintain IVR quota monitoring, although within that alternative there are several options to change some of the provisions and reporting deadlines. The second alternative would be to eliminate IVR reporting and require VMS reporting, and there are options for daily reporting or trip-by-trip reporting. I'll just move on from that. The next section is the, as I mentioned, the at-sea monitoring component. There are four elements of this, and one is the proposed requirements for observer program service providers. Should we require the industry to pay for observer coverage? The second is the options for observer coverage levels. Options to maximize sea sampling and address net slippage, and then the maximized retention alternative. This is all within Section 4.0 of the document. Okay, the port side element is Section 5.0. Initially, when we started talking about port side sampling in this amendment, the committee identified an overarching objective for port side sampling, which was to sample enough landing events to aid in the accurate estimation of catch and bycatch in the Atlantic herring fishery. As part of that, the program is intended to supplement or enhance and cross-check catch data that's collected at sea that relates directly back to the goals and objectives of the catch monitoring program. And then second, to confirm the accuracy of self-reported catch, which right now we're considering options to do that either at the vessel level or the dealer level. So within the port side element of the catch monitoring program, you have essentially five components. First being the requirements for portside sampling service providers. If in the event that the industry is required to pay for the program. The second is the portside sampling design. There is a general design described in the document that includes sampling priorities and trip selection priorities that have been identified by the committee. The third element would be the actual sampling protocols. The fourth would be the coverage levels, and then the fifth is the are the alternatives for verifying the self-reported landings. In terms of the portside sampling program sampling design, we've had some extensive discussion about this at the committee level, as well as some of the technical folks who've been working on this amendment. We've talked about this quite a bit. The way that it's laid out in the document right now is that the sampling priorities and the trip selection priorities and the target coverage levels, all of three of those things would be defined by the council. Those would form the basis for the annual sampling design. So in general, the way the process is proposed in the document, NIMS through the Science Center would consult with the PDT, the Council, and the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission to develop a sampling design and trip selection criteria every year based on these priorities and targets that are identified by the Council. That sampling design would then be distributed to the service providers, and then the pre-landing notification in the fishery would be used to identify trips that require portside sampling. Through the pre-landing notification, NIMS would essentially communicate to the vessel if the vessel needs to have that trip sampled by a portside sampler. So it's sort of generally laid out in the document that way. For those of you who are on the herring committee, I think you understand some of the details, or I guess the devil is in the details, because when you get into the details of how this process may work, we've gotten a little bit tangled up, and I think there's some issues that need to be resolved. In terms of the portside sampling priorities, the Herring Committee did approve this list of priorities for the portside sampling program. The priorities would be providing a third-party estimate of landings, sampling and subsampling offloads to estimate species composition and amount of landings on trips with observers on board, which again relates back to the goals and objectives. Sampling and subsampling offloads to estimate species composition and amount of landings on trips that are subject to catch caps. In other words, if there's a haddock catch cap, one of the sampling priorities would be to sample trips where haddock is caught. Collecting commercial catch samples to support stock assessments, and collecting commercial catch samples to evaluate spawning condition. So those are the sampling priorities that the committee has proposed to be included in the document. After sampling priorities come trip selection priorities and options for coverage levels. The committee has identified as trip selection priorities for portside sampling trips that would occur in river herring monitoring and avoidance areas, if that is something that happens in this amendment, trips in the groundfish closed areas, trips with landings that count against a catch cap, and trips with observers on board. These would be the trips that would become priority trips to be met by a portside sampler. And then we have four options for target coverage levels, 10%, 25%, 50%, and 100% targeted coverage of all landings events in this fishery. So we've got sampling priorities, trip selection criteria, and coverage levels. The idea is to take all of that information and provide an annual sampling design that gives you an idea by time and area or something like that what how many trips are going to need to be covered in the fishery. Okay, the last element of the portside sampling program, as I mentioned, are the alternatives that are under consideration to verify self-reported landings. And the idea here is that we want to essentially cross-check the captain's estimates of the captain's hail weight or the captain's estimates of total catch through a third party. The alternatives are listed in Section 5.4 of the document. The idea would be to incorporate this into a port site sampling program so that the port site sampler is essentially the third party, and that person who's coming to meet the vessel to do the sampling and subsampling would also go through a process to estimate the total amount of landings on that vessel. Category A and B herring vessels and herring carriers would be required to go through a process of certifying their fish holds for capacity. Category C limited access vessels that don't pump fish would have an option to essentially store their herring separately so that the third party could estimate the catch. The protocol for sounding the fish hold and estimating the catch is something that needs to be looked at on a more technical level and provided for the document before this is finalized and moves forward. The second alternative is to do this at the dealer level. This alternative would require some sort of sealing and certification of dealer trucks and transport vehicles to provide a capacity estimate. The details of this alternative are not entirely clear. It's not clear exactly how this would be incorporated into a port site sampling program because the port site samplers are going to meet the vessels at the first point of landing and to try to then incorporate some sort of catch estimate after the fish have left the vessel and go into transport vehicles and have that be the responsibility of the port site sampler gets a little bit trickier. It's not an impossibility, but the details are unclear. And it's not really clear how this would work in terms of how the landings would be estimated from the volumetric capacity of different trucks that are used in the fishery. The administrative provisions and the administrative responsibilities associated with this alternative are also unclear at this time. In terms of funding, we have two alternatives in the document right now. The first alternative is to fund the catch monitoring program from federal sources and to supplement with industry funding when federal funds are inadequate. This alternative specifies that the industry would be responsible for paying service providers for either at sea or port site sampling as necessary. The second alternative is to fund the catch monitoring program from federally permitted dealers. It's a little bit unclear how dealers would pay for observer coverage on individual vessels. So there is a sub-option for dealers to contribute to the port site sampling program and vessels to contribute to the at-sea monitoring program. So that's the catch monitoring program. It's incredibly complicated, but it's a complicated issue and it's a complicated fishery. What I've done in the decision document is I've identified what I see as the outstanding issues and tried to categorize them as either major or minor. Of course, that's all subject to interpretation. The major outstanding issues, in my opinion, will likely preclude completion of the draft EIS. These are things that are going to cause us trouble when analyzing the alternatives. These are things that we need to resolve before we can finish the analysis. So the major issues really must be addressed during the development of the range of alternatives or at least early during the draft EIS preparation. For catch monitoring, the major issues I see, there's a lack of clarity right now in the document about which measures are going to apply to Category D permit holders. In general, we've already agreed that the catch monitoring program will apply to A, B, and C. It's going to be important as we develop this draft EIS to be really clear on what measures are going to apply to what vessels. I'm not sure this is an issue that we can resolve here today, but like I said, it's something that I'm marking that we need to be clear on before we get this draft EIS finished. In order to do a thorough analysis, we need to know which vessels are going to be impacted by which measures. The Category D, the open access fishery, it's a little unclear right now what we're going to be doing with those vessels. The federal portside sampling program is a much more significant outstanding issue. There was a lot of debate at the last meeting about setting up a federal portside sampling program and if it's going to be established in Amendment 5, who's going to be responsible for running it, who's going to be responsible for the administration and oversight of the program. The roles and responsibilities of the agency and the Science Center remain unresolved at this point with respect to the federal portside sampling program. The alternatives for verifying self-reported landings, a little bit unclear, particularly the dealer one that relates to certifying the capacity of transport vehicles. The process for both of those alternatives is not really clear. The requirements are not well defined, and the objectives of the data collection and what's actually going to be done with that data, it's not clear. Right now we're saying, you know, we're going to have the portside samplers sound the fish tanks potentially and provide an estimate of landings, but it's not really clear what we're going to do with that information and what if that differs that from what the vessels are reporting, and are we just collecting a new stream of information that we're just going to deal with later? So there's a lot of questions about what we're doing with those particular alternatives. Funding issues, I mean, obviously funding is going to be clear. It's going to be important to be clear on what the funding requirements are going to be so that we can do a thorough economic evaluation in the draft EIS. This also relates back to which vessels are going to be subject to the provisions in the amendment. And then the portside sampling methodology and protocols. This is a really big issue, but this is a big technical issue. I don't think that this is something that the council necessarily can resolve, certainly not today. But what we need to do is, if we're going to move forward with a portside sampling program in this amendment and we have sampling priorities, we need to go back and create sampling protocols that directly relate to each of those sampling priorities. That's something that will be done during the development of the draft EIS. The only reason I'm noting it here is because it's a really big technical issue. So it's not going to prevent us from developing the draft EIS, but it is certainly going to take up a lot of time during the development of the draft EIS. In terms of minor issues, I guess you could call these minor, these, I think, really need to be addressed during the EIS development, and certainly we need to have these issues resolved prior to approving the draft EIS and going to public hearings. Some of the details for the options for observer coverage levels are a bit unclear. Process for determining on an annual basis what the coverage levels will be, the methods and the responsibilities. I think we need a lot more discussion on that during the development of the draft EIS. The closed area 1 sampling provisions are proposed in various sections of this amendment. A decision that can be made today that would help to clarify things is whether or not the closed area 1 sampling provisions should reflect the new rule that came out on November 30th, which eliminates the exemption for operational discards in the fishery. We just need to clarify that issue as we move forward. And then the details of the maximized retention experimental fishery alternative, there's some administrative and procedural details that should probably be fleshed out before we go to public hearings. So that's issue number one. Second issue is management measures to address river herring bycatch. Now, we have also gone through a process of streamlining these alternatives since the September Council meeting. Things were pretty complicated when we looked at this at the September Council meeting. If you recall, we were using a Stage 1, Stage 2 approach, and we had three alternatives for the areas and then a whole suite of alternatives that could apply to any of those areas. What we've done now, based on some guidance provided by the Herring Plan Development Team, is that we've taken everything in terms of the measures to address river herring bycatch, and we've condensed them into three alternatives. And we're calling these spatial management alternatives, which are the hot spots that you recall. The areas that have been identified for these alternatives are simpler to understand, they're ecologically based, and they're relatively enforceable. What we've also done is linked management goals to the actual alternatives, so that you can whatever your goal is, there's a suite of areas that applies to that goal and a suite of measures to consider. So things have been sort of packaged together and linked to a management goal versus just a menu of things to mix and match from. So having said that, we now have three alternatives moving forward, first one being the no-action alternative, the second alternative being a river herring monitoring and avoidance alternative, and the third alternative being river herring protection. So with alternative two, the goal is monitoring and avoidance. So you're going to have a certain set of areas that relate to that goal and a certain set of measures that you may consider in those areas. With alternative three, the goal is river herring protection. So you're going to have a different set of areas and a different set of management measures that relate to that goal. As an example, I know you can't see this, but these maps are in the document, and maybe you can see it a little better on the slide. These are the proposed monitoring and These are the proposed monitoring and avoidance areas in alternative two. And they're the gray shaded areas up in here. You can see that they're much simpler. This is bimonthly. Much simpler than the stage one, stage two approach that we had before. The monitoring and avoidance areas were selected based on where we have observed encounters of river herring in the Atlantic herring fishery. So these are larger areas than what you would consider to be the protection areas. These are areas where we've seen interaction over the past few years. So they're the areas that we want to monitor and potentially try to avoid river herring. Now, the protection areas under alternative three are smaller areas, and these are based on observations of high levels of river herring encounters in the fishery. These are bimonthly as well, and as you can see here, there are no areas that come out in May and June or July and August. So these would be closed areas under the protection alternative, and they're proposed here for January, February, March, April, and then down here September, October, and November, December. These are the areas with the highest observed encounters of river herring. So these areas are obviously smaller than the monitoring and avoidance areas. These would actually be closed areas under this alternative. So here are here's the linkage here that I was talking about before. If your goal is monitoring and perhaps avoidance, then you go with an alternative where you set up monitoring and avoidance areas and you consider options to monitor and avoid. First option, 100% observer coverage. Second option, closed area one sampling provisions with or without 100% observer coverage. The third option in here is a two-phase bycatch avoidance program based on a project that is being conducted right now by the Sustainable Fisheries Coalition. The fourth option is some sort of a move-along rule. And then the question is, do we want other options in here? If your goal is to protect river herring, you would select the alternative that has river herring protection areas, and your management measures would close those areas to protect river herring. There may be other options to consider here, too. Right now, the proposal is to close the areas to all herring permit holders fishing with small mesh. So that's essentially how the alternatives are constructed now. The other element of river herring management, management measures to address river herring bycatch that came up at the September Council meeting was the idea of developing options for river herring catch caps. The Council did pass a motion in September to direct the Herring Committee to develop some river herring catch cap options. The Herring PDT immediately convened a working group to start reviewing the data and developing the analysis to do that. We had a Herring PDT meeting in December to review and refine the work from the working group and develop the PDT recommendations. There is a detailed Herring PDT discussion paper on this issue presented at the December 20th committee meeting, also included in your binder. The committee did discuss this issue in detail on December 20th and did not finalize any recommendations. We actually adjourned the meeting with a motion to eliminate catch caps from consideration in Amendment 5 tabled that we did not come back and revisit. So there is no specific committee recommendation on this option. Since this is kind of a new issue, I'll go through very briefly what's in the catch cap analysis and the Herring PDT paper in case everybody hasn't had a chance to review it. In the paper, the Herring PDT did a thorough analysis of the data. We selected a master data set to work with, and we sort of took a two-step approach to trying to estimate river herring removals. We decided that the best way to proceed would be to first derive the best possible estimate of river herring removals and then evaluate that estimate and provide our recommendations. So what we did is we looked at VTR versus observer data and did a detailed comparison so that we could understand what the variability would be, what the variability associated with using that data to expand upwards to the fishery, either through either approach. For a number of reasons, we chose to use the observer data and expand upwards to generate estimates of river herring removals, and we did that using two methods. One which is a ratio method and another one which is a trip level extrapolation from the observer data. And we provided the results 2005 through 2009 annual estimates of river herring removals. We provided those annually. We provided them by half years. And we also provided them by area in three areas, the Gulf of Maine, Cape Cod, which is just a statistical area 521, because that's really the only part of that area where there's river herring encounter, and then southern New England. We also provided all of the variability associated with all of those estimates. Those are in the document, and they are summarized right here in this table using both methods, method one being a ratio method and method two being an extrapolation. I've included plus or minus two standard errors here to give you an idea of the variability. As you can see, there's a lot of variability, and there are a lot of reasons for that. We've had a detailed, thorough discussion of some of the reasons of why the data may be so variable, and this is something that the PDT really wants to try to dig into more during the analysis in the draft EIS. But in general, when you look at these numbers, these are the 2009 estimates. I'm providing 2009 here because the 2009 estimates from 2005 to 2009 were clearly the more robust. We had higher levels of coverage, and the Observer Program has made some changes to their sampling protocols that have improved sampling in the fisheries, especially in the most recent years. And the other thing that we found is that, it's clear that the removals are highest in the southern New England area. Having said that, I just want to highlight something that the Herring PDT has mentioned many times, but decided to provide a visual here maybe to try to drive home the point a little bit more. The Herring PDT is really most concerned about removals of river herring by the bottom trawl sector in this fishery. I know a lot of attention has been focused on the midwater trawl and pear trawl sector, but the PDT just wants to note that the bottom trawl sector may be removing smaller amounts, but the removals are much more frequent and consistent. And really, we're looking at southern New England here. When we did our analysis, we included all trips with 2,000 pounds or more of Atlantic herring. And there were a lot of reasons for doing that. I mean, one of the reasons is it gives us a very large universe of vessels to take a look at when we're slicing and dicing the data. And so what we found, if you look at this graph here, when you look at 2005 to 2009 river herring removals, and these are based on the estimates through the methods that I just described, the bottom trawl sector in southern New England represents 48% of the river herring removals during that time period, but only 16% of the herring landings during that time period. So, you know, when you're looking at river herring bycatch in the quote-unquote Atlantic herring fishery and you're looking at southern New England, half of the river herring bycatch is coming from a sector of the fishery that's only taking about 15% of the herring. So those boats are representing a very large chunk of the river herring bycatch that we're seeing in southern New England, but not so much a large chunk of the directed Atlantic herring fishery. I think it's a very important point, and it seems to get lost in translation. So the Herring PDT identified some concerns in both the discussion paper as well as the PDT report. There's a December 2nd PDT report. The PDT is concerned about just setting a cap on river herring based on highly variable estimates of removals. We are concerned that there's a lack of a specific goal or objective for the catch cap. We don't have a river herring stock assessment at this time, so we have no ability to relate a catch cap to a river herring population or biomass, fishing mortality, or any sort of reference point. We also, at this point, are concerned about the ability to accurately estimate river herring removals and all of the variability around these estimates, which, again, there's a lot of reasons for that, and that's what the PDT really feels that we need to be focusing on right now, is how to address the variability in estimating the catch, not using the variable estimates to try to set caps that are going to either potentially be too high or too low for the fishery and their consequences to both of those outcomes. The PDT is also very concerned about its inability to predict changes in fishing effort and river herring catch that may result from a cap. So these are all things that sort of led to the general consensus statement that you see from the herring PDT. I guess I'll read it. I'll try to be fast, but I think it's important. Given the variability, uncertainty, and challenges associated with sampling the Atlantic herring fishery, the herring PDT cannot generate a precise enough estimate of river herring catch on which to base a cap. There may be some utility in applying a river herring catch estimate to trigger increased monitoring or other management approaches. However, the herring PDT does not recommend developing quota-based approaches to river herring bycatch management in Amendment 5, expected improvements to the catch monitoring program and completion of the coastwide stock assessment may create the link between the cap and some measure of stock status, blah, blah, blah. Other management approaches under consideration in this amendment are more appropriate to consider at this time. I mean, hopefully everybody understands the consensus. I'm happy to answer any questions about it. So, river herring, major issues outstanding. One of the major issues, does the council want to consider other options for the monitoring and avoidance alternative? This isn't something that's required, but it's something that needs to be done now if we're going to do it. Otherwise, we move forward with the range of options that we have. Same question for the protection alternative. Again, not required, but if there are other options to consider, now is the time. The move-along options that are in the document right now are extremely problematic. They are not feasible from an administrative or enforcement standpoint. They're extremely burdensome, overly complicated, and I have some significant concerns myself about implementing move-along rules through regulation. The committee did not have a chance to revisit this issue at the last committee meeting. We ran out of time, so the move-along options remain unresolved. And then again, and this I think is even more important than it was with the catch monitoring program, but for the river herring measures, how are we treating Category D permit holders? Are all of these river herring measures going to apply to Category D permit holders? And we need to think about things like pre-trip notifications, pre-landing notifications, VMS requirements, and all of the things that are sort of embedded in these alternatives that the limited access fishery already has in place. But the open access fishery does not. So there's some pretty significant issues there. Minor issues, the two-phase bycatch avoidance approach, I didn't really go into it in any detail in this presentation, but since the last committee meeting, I have rewritten it and fleshed it out so that it's a little more clear what the two phases are and what would actually be done in this amendment and what might be a follow-up action or what the intent of the second phase may be. I think we can work out the details of that as we develop the draft EIS. I mean, there are probably some elements of that that need further discussion, but I don't see that as a showstopper. I think we're far enough along on that that we could work out the details as we move through. And then the other issue, which is just always going to be there, is the management coordination and the overlap with the Atlantic mackerel fishery and what the Mid-Atlantic Council is working on with respect to the mackerel amendment right now. You know, there's a whole bunch of different management bodies trying to address river herring, and the interaction of all of these different things and the overlap with the fisheries is going to have to be considered as we move forward. So that was the second issue. The next three will go much quicker, I promise. The third issue is criteria for midwater trawl access to the groundfish closed areas. Now, this is Section 7.0 of the document, and right now there are five alternatives under consideration. No action, which is keep everything as is in terms of these vessels accessing the groundfish closed areas. This, by the way, does not impact at all what was decided this morning with respect to the haddock catch cap. This is just whether or not the vessels have access to the closed areas. The second alternative is to go back to the pre-closed area one provisions. Alternative, the next one is to require 100% observer coverage. The next one is to apply the closed area one sampling provisions. Again, we need to go back and just clarify those. And then the fifth alternative, or the last alternative, is just to keep them as closed areas and not allow any herring vessels in there. Right now, it's not clear which vessels would be subject to these provisions. The way we've talked about it is that it would be midwater trawl vessels, but we do have a groundfish closed area in the inshore Gulf of Maine. So I think the council needs to clarify whether it would be just midwater trawl or whether it's all herring gears. Is this by permit category? There needs to be some clarification as to which vessels these rules would apply to, and then, as I mentioned, clarifying the closed area one provisions. So the outstanding issues, again, clarification for the herring vessels that it would apply to, and then whether or not you want to consider any other alternatives at this point. The last issue, I'm going to skip over the measures to address interactions with the mackerel fishery because we've incorporated that into the catch monitoring program. The last issue is measures to protect spawning fish. This was added to Amendment 5 during the discussion of 2010 priorities. We had some very general committee discussion at the September committee meeting, and then the committee discussed it very generally but didn't have a lot of information, so we haven't identified any specific goals and objectives to address this issue, and no specific management alternatives have been developed. The Herring PDT did put together a discussion paper. It is in your binders. I believe it's document number 11. That discussion paper is draft and has not gone to the committee yet. It was going to go to the committee for January 20th, but since we canceled that meeting, I've included the discussion paper in your binder materials so that the council can consider if we're going to move forward or how we're going to move forward with developing alternatives to address measures to protect spawning fish in Amendment 5. So outstanding issues, I mean, the whole thing is an outstanding issue. And what I did here is I just copied from your decision document the one element here for measures to protect spawning fish. It is gray, and as Doug mentioned, the gray shaded items in your decision table are the ones that I have marked as not ready for the draft EIS. There may be others, but these are the major issues that I see. So right now with the spawning issue, what we have is the paper provided by the PDT, which gives you a history of the management to address spawning fish in the past, as well as sort of a summary of what information we have out there about spawning fish and what information is collected through the port site sampling programs that are administered by the states. So that's an overview of what we've done since September. While all of this has been going on, the Herring PDT has been working on a bunch of other stuff. And we continue to try to work on some of these issues because they will be important for the draft EIS. As I mentioned, a really big issue here is convening this working group to look at these first two issues, really. Data issues, trying to resolve the differences between the port site sampling data and the observer data, sampling variability, and then sampling protocols that would be consistent with the sampling priorities identified in this amendment for the port site program. Those are two huge issues that will take up a lot of time over the next few months. We are also working on more analysis of the observer coverage options that look at seasonality and accuracy versus precision. We're developing a model to evaluate the costs of spatial management or closed areas or hotspot work, things like that. And then, of course, all of the other elements of the draft EIS and the supporting analysis. In terms of the timeline, we have spent the last several months trying to streamline this amendment and address outstanding issues and pare down the alternatives under consideration. Assuming that the council approves some range of alternatives today to develop into a draft EIS, the draft EIS would be prepared for the June or September council meeting. My guess would be September. The Amendment 5 public hearings would then occur shortly after that, and then the final selection of measures shortly after that. Worst case scenario. According to this timeline, probably January 2012 for final selection of measures, and then complete and submit the amendment as quickly as possible. We need to keep in mind that we have a benchmark stock assessment occurring in June of 2012, at which point we're going to need to hit the ground running to do the 2013 to 15 specs. So if there's any way we can get this document finished before that happens, we're going to be in a lot better place to deal with the specifications. That's all I have.
Okay, I think what we'll do now is take a break for lunch. We'll be back at 1:30, at which time you can ask questions, and we'll get into the document. 1:30. 1:30. 1:30. 1:30. 1:30. 1:30. 1:30. 1:30. 1:30. 1:30. 1:30. 1:30.